Hello and welcome to another episode of Cooper Talks. And today I'm going to be looking at the third of the sort of three crises that happened in the middle period of the Cold War. The first two being the Hungarian Uprising and the Cuban Missile Crisis, along with the Bay of Pigs issue. And this one is the Prague Spring, which happens in 1968. There were other things going on in the background, such as the Vietnam War, etc. But this is kind of the third in the middle period. After this, we'll start looking at the 1970s up to the end of the Cold War. So this is kind of the last of the middle period, although there's lots of overlap, obviously, because that's the way history goes. It's never one thing in isolation. They all link together. Oh, which is very useful if you have to write something called a narrative analysis. But that's for those doing EdExcel history for GCSE to worry about. Anyway, yes, so welcome to this episode. And we're going to be looking at the situation in Prague, which at this time was in Czechoslovakia, the capital city of Czechoslovakia. And for those of you thinking today, it's in modern day Czech Republic or Czechia, as it now is called. And yeah, we're going to be exploring how that impacted on détente, how it affected general relations, and what exactly happened. And in many ways, the events in 1968 in the Prague Spring were a carbon copy, mostly, of the Hungarian Uprising of 1956. So there's lots of similarities here, and just bear that in mind, because it can get confusing, because they are very similar, just different people. There are exceptions, of course, there are variations. It's also worth bearing in mind, and this is maybe for another podcast or do some research, find out about it, but 1968 was an interesting year because it's known in many ways as a year of revolutions, particularly student uprisings. We have the Prague Spring, but 68 was also a time of major student demonstrations across America, mostly to do with race relations and the Vietnam War, also women's rights. You also had uprisings in Paris and other parts of Europe and across the world. So there's lots of theories and ideas behind this, but 1968 was a particularly turbulent year. But we're going to concentrate today on the Prague Spring. Now, go back to 1962, October 1962, we have the Cuban Missile Crisis. And as I mentioned before, that was about as close as the world came to an actual nuclear war during the Cold War. It was really on the brink. And that alarmed people. And it led to this policy of détente, which is improving of relations. I'm going to do the next episode in the Cold War series. I will do on détente, more on the 1970s. But it starts in 1964 and then goes on to in the 60s. You end up with the hotline being set up between the Kremlin and the White House so they can have quick communication and discussions about test ban treaties and limiting the growth of nuclear weapons. Didn't reduce them, but it limited their growth to a degree. So it's an improvement, but it, you know, not exactly peace there. So détente would carry on throughout the 60s and go on into the 70s. But an event happened in 1968, the Prague Spring, which would really test how far this improving of relations could actually happen. And there are a number of issues around it, not the least of which was the Americans' involvement in the Vietnam War, which was really hitting its peak in 1968. So let's consider the issues. Now, always worth thinking about maps. Okay, geography is a very important, useful thing. Knowing where stuff is really does help understand some of the history. Now, if you haven't got a map, you can try and picture Eastern Europe, the Iron Curtain. You've got the Soviet Union, which goes up to the borders of northern Poland and eastern Poland, covers modern day Ukraine, Belarus, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, and Kaliningrad, which is a Russian exclave to the north of Poland. Poland borders East Germany. Below them is Czechoslovakia, which is one country, remember. And that stretches from West Germany and Austria. Remember, West Germany now in NATO. Austria remains independent, but very much on the capitalist side. And it goes and borders the Soviet Union. as Slovakia still does border Ukraine today. Then below them, you've got Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria. Yugoslavia is communist, but remember, Marshal Tito rejected Stalin's commands and they fell out. And so communist, but not in the Warsaw Pact. And Albania, which is below Yugoslavia. So if you can picture that, Czechoslovakia is kind of in the middle. Okay, it kind of splits the non-Soviet Warsaw Pact countries in half, okay, between north and south. So strategically, Czechoslovakia was really important to the Warsaw Pact and control over Eastern Europe. And Czechoslovakia also was important industrially. The former Skoda, well, the Skoda works were based there. They had large mineral deposits and assets there. So Czechoslovakia was an important part of the whole Warsaw Pact and Eastern European alliance. Okay, so that's a bit of context that the geography plays there. Just try and picture that or have a look at a map if you've got access to one. So let's go back to 1945 and 1946, and Czechoslovakia emerging after World War II. Obviously, they've been conquered by the Nazis, and then you'd had the Red Army come back. Prague had miraculously survived all these invasions as a city, and it's well worth a visit. But Czechoslovakia had been invaded by the Nazis, then the Soviet Union, and they'd been promised the free and fair elections that were guaranteed at Potsdam. All very good, very positive. And they had voted for a coalition of left-wing parties in 1945 and 1946. Not necessarily communist, but left-wing. So a coalition, a group of political parties working together to govern the country. In elections in 1946, the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia was the biggest single party, but still had to rule as part of a coalition. It didn't have party power in its own right. By 1948, Stalin and the Soviet Union had had enough of this, and they basically banned all the other parties, particularly when it looked likely that the communists were losing support in Czechoslovakia. So they basically forced other, well, they banned other parties, leaving the Communist Party the only party to stand in elections. And they murdered a popular opposition figure or leading figure who wasn't a communist, Jan Masaryk. My Czech is not brilliant, so apologies if you are from Czechoslovakia or Czech Republic or Slovakia today, and I'm making a mess of this. But you get the murder of Jan Masaryk, and that upsets a lot of the people of Czechoslovakia. They feel that they're having communism imposed on them, very similar to Hungary's attitude with a salami strategy, if you remember that. So that leads to hatred towards hardline communists, and the leader who ends up taking power and replacing Masaryk is a guy called Novotny. Now, he was really hardline, very strict communist, lots of secret trials, secret police, etc. And yeah, basically it was a brutal rule, brutal governance that really upset a lot of people in Czechoslovakia and alienated them. At the same time, as a result of the economic policies of Comecon, the sort of Warsaw Pact, the Soviet response to the Marshall Aid, what it meant was a lot of the wealth and natural resources of Czechoslovakia were basically being given to the Soviet Union in exchange for not very much. And as a result, Czechoslovakia, which had, let's remember, been part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, it had been a wealthy and successful country of Middle Europe in between the wars, was facing severe economic decline. And it was becoming a pretty miserable place to live. And that gets worse and worse progressively throughout the 1960s. Things are going badly wrong there. And the failure to deal with that economic crisis by Novotny led to demands for greater reforms from people within the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia. Now, that's important to remember. This isn't a group of people outside the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia. This is a disagreement between two different sides of the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia. So if you imagine there's the left-wing side, which we might call the hard-wing side of the Communist Party, and then there's the moderate side. So whereas in Hungary, Nagy had joined the Communist Party in sort of took over leadership of the Moderates. Here we don't have someone from outside joining in. You basically have the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia. You've got Novotny leading it, being hardcore and very, very strict on it. And then you've got the moderate side of the Communist Party. You say, hey, we want people to love communism. OK, we want to relax things and make people happy, because then they'll just choose to love communism rather than being forced into it. OK, they want people to fall in love with communism rather than be obliged to communism. So that's kind of the theory. As I mentioned, Novotny, really hardcore communist. He always followed the Soviet line, never stood up for Czechoslovakia, and he refused to introduce any new reforms at all, okay, unless they were ordered by the Soviet Union. So really was a puppet of the Soviet Union. During Khrushchev's time, in the late 50s, early 60s, when Khrushchev had said, we must de-Stalinize, we must sort of make some reforms and, you know, improve things and, you know, get rid of some of those worst excesses of Stalin's days, Novotny was really reluctant to do this, even though it came from the Soviet Union. And he was very slow to release any political prisoners from the Stalin era. And that just increased the hostility towards Novotny. Okay. So the economic failure, just to go into that, that was going on in the 1960s, as mentioned, Comecon meant those natural raw materials, ironworks and coal reserves, they were being sent to the Soviet Union. And also the USSR was refusing, kind of as a communist dictate, to allow Czechoslovakia to produce any consumer goods. So even if people had money, they didn't have anything they could buy. It was all very basic, necessity-based, which you could argue is more true communism. But that was the theory there. Now, with rising economic failure, Novotny did realise he needed to do something. So he comes up with a new economic model, which he imaginatively calls the new economic model. And he introduces this in 1965. The trouble is, it's one of those things that's done by central planning. And essentially, in this new economic model, there's a greater focus on producing consumer goods. Sounds great. Unfortunately, the consumer goods they produced couldn't be bought by ordinary Czechoslovakians because they were too expensive. They kind of had more of an idea of possibly selling off some of these consumer goods to capitalist countries or to other communist states. So selling them off to countries with stronger economies. What you ended up with was the Czechoslovakian government ordering them to produce lots of stuff that no one was buying and that ordinary Czechs couldn't buy, and Slovaks. So this just compounded the existing problem, economic problem, in Czechoslovakia. And it gave impetus to the more moderate reformers, moderate communists who wanted to reform things. And these were led by a Communist Party member called Alexander Dubček. Again, I hope I've said that right, but Alexander Dubček, he's saying we need more democratic reforms. We need to listen to the people and give the people what they want. That's what he meant by democracy. He said, if we do that, you know, we'll sort out the economic situation. We'll make what people actually want and can afford rather than telling them what they want and what they can't afford. Now, Novotny is all very worried about this, and he kind of appeals to the new, well, the relatively new Soviet leader, Leonid Brezhnev. I always recognise him, big eyebrows. Brezhnev had taken over from Khrushchev back in 1964 after Khrushchev was deposed following what was seen as the humiliation of the Cuban Missile Crisis. And this, in many ways, is Brezhnev's first big test in 1968. So Brezhnev refuses to support Novotny, though. He kind of says, no, sort it out yourself, not intervening. And although he didn't endorse the reformers, his refusal to support Novotny gave the impression, or led people to believe, that that was it, Novotny was out, Brezhnev would allow the moderates to take power, and he wasn't happy. There is probably some truth in that, because he didn't want there to be a crisis in Czechoslovakia. Now, that leads us to the start of January 1968. At this point, Novotny held the two key positions in Czechoslovakia. He was first secretary of the Communist Party, which meant he was the boss of the Communist Party, and he was also the president of Czechoslovakia. Now remember, in communist states like this, being president is largely an honorary position, okay? It's the figurehead. The person with all the real power who makes decisions, makes the real decisions, is the leader of the Communist Party, okay? So, but he holds both, okay? He holds both, so he's got the combined power. On the 5th of January, 68, Novotny ends up being replaced as First Secretary of the Communist Party by Alexander Dubček. And Brezhnev publicly supports this move. So, it, if you like, it's a coup within the Communist Party. That's what I really want to stress here. It's within the Communist Party. So Dubček ends up taking over as leader of the Communist Party, and he is a moderate reformer. Now, Novotny, he realises, well, if Brezhnev's going to support this move, I've got a hostile favour, and being president is a bit of a waste of time. So he resigns as president of Czechoslovakia, and he's replaced by a former general called Svoboda, who also supported Dubček's reforms. So we see hardline communists being pushed out, moderate reforming communists being brought in. So remember, Dubček, committed communist, absolute love communism, but he wants the people to love communism and love the communist regime. So he coins the phrase, he wants to introduce socialism with a human face, okay? He wants to make it nice communism, all right? Get rid of all the worst bits, all the brutal stuff that people had. So he introduces, from March onwards, springtime, a series of reforms, and these are called the Prague Spring Reforms. And these will include greater political freedom, such as allowing free speech, people can make public criticisms, there'll be freedom of the press, and abolition of press censorship by the Communist Party and by the authorities. So that will allow people to express views. Hey, great. He also suggests a 10-year programme for democratic reforms. Now, again, it's always great to come up with a 5-year or 10-year plan where you can say, oh, yeah, if we'll achieve all these things down the road. OK, not right now, but just eventually. Promise of a greater tomorrow sort of thing. But in this programme for democratic reforms, he does suggest that there will be democratic elections that will be free. And eventually, there could well be multi-party politics. OK, because his theory is in 10 years' time, once his reforms have worked, everyone will be so delighted with communism in Czechoslovakia that, of course, they would willingly vote to keep the communists in power. And that would alleviate a lot of the tension. He also ordered the reduction in the powers of the secret police, particularly the power to imprison without trial, and remove some of the travel restrictions within Czechoslovakia and between other communist states. And actually starts improving fresh contacts with the West, particularly West Germany and Austria as well, trying to establish better trade as well as travel between the areas. So all of these turning away from the East and towards the West a bit for economic security. Remember, if you remember the Hungarian uprising, these are very similar to the reforms that happened in Hungary in 1956. However, okay, there were problems, just as there had been in 1956 in Hungary. The problems were that by giving some limited reforms about allowing free speech and the promise of maybe future multi-party elections, these limited reforms actually led to demands for even greater reforms and more rapid reforms. So a group of social democrats tried to begin forming their own separate political party and challenge the Communist parties there and then in 1968. So kind of taking the promise of eventually in 10 years, maybe having multi-party elections, saying, no, let's have them now. Let's go all out for it. And that's too much. And there's a journalist from Czechoslovakia. I'm going to make an absolute horlicks of this, I'm afraid. Ludvík Valkulik. Valkulik, please. Do feel free to let me know how I'm supposed to pronounce these. He wrote an article called The 2000 Words. And he called on the people to support and protest for even more extreme reform. Basically, to take Czechoslovakia in the lines of the capitalist West. So these are taking Dubček's minor reforms and trying to make them even bigger and take them a lot more. Now, Brezhnev was not happy about this at all. And he was particularly worried that some of these reformers were even suggesting Czechoslovakia might leave the Warsaw Pact. That was a big one. So Brezhnev, having kind of backed the reforms, a bit like Khrushchev did in Hungary in 1956, he then looks and says, this is going too far and they're heading far too much towards the West. And the big worry was they might leave the Warsaw Pact. And of course, then there's the possibility that having left the Warsaw Pact, they might join NATO. Or, speaking in 2022, this is very current. Anyway, that was the big fear. Now, why? Goes back to the geography. The strategic location of Czechoslovakia. If Czechoslovakia did leave the Warsaw Pact, it splits North and South Warsaw Pact in two. You'd also have the loss of industry to communism in the Warsaw Pact countries. And so Brezhnev is looking at this and he's saying, no, we're going to have to stop this. Unlike in Hungary in 1956, when it was basically just the Soviet Union, in 1968, Brezhnev and the USSR actually has the support of a number of other Warsaw Pact leaders, particularly from Hungary, which has got a hardline communist leader, Poland and East Germany. And they're saying, we don't want these ideas from Czechoslovakia, these Prague Spring reforms, spreading. We don't want people rising up and wanting all these freedoms and extra rights and elections here, because much like Novotny, they maintain their power by a strict control. It goes back to the sort of clenched fist analogy. They kept communism secure in these countries by being really strict and really tight. They saw that Dubček was trying to relax the grip to make people feel more happy. But as soon as he relaxed it, they were trying to escape from his clutches. So they said, we don't want to risk this spreading and weakening our control. So those other Warsaw Pact leaders are putting pressure on Brezhnev, saying, we've got to do something. We can't risk this going on. And particularly because the whole economic focus of the Prague Spring reforms was on the West rather than developing better relations and trade with Warsaw Pact countries. They felt that Dubček was kind of possibly trying to follow the Yugoslavian path, the Tito path, and basically break away from the Warsaw Pact, but possibly communism as well, and develop into a communist state. So, yeah, it wasn't all the Warsaw Pact countries. Albania and Romania both objected to this. They didn't like the idea of other states invading and interfering, because they felt the same could happen to them. So this would actually lead to Albania eventually leaving the Warsaw Pact and Romania under its leader Ceausescu becoming a bit more distant and reserved, but still a part of the Warsaw Pact. So in order to stop the reforms, the invasion was launched on the 20th to 21st of August. And forces from the USSR and Bulgaria, East Germany, Poland and Hungary all sent troops into Czechoslovakia. Okay, so whereas in 56 it was just the Soviet Union, here we've got most of the Warsaw Pact countries all sending in troops to stop Dubček and the Prague Spring reforms. Now, lots of protests began across Czechoslovakia, particularly students, but others as well. They went out, they protested in the streets. But unlike Hungary in 1956, there was no armed resistance, in a sense. Remember, Dubček was a communist. These reforms had been conducted by communist figures, so they didn't want to be opposing other communist forces. Also, memories of Hungary 12 years earlier, they probably knew it was pointless with the might of the surrounding forces coming at them. So there were protests, but no armed resistance. So fewer than 100 people were killed during the Prague Spring. Dubček and the other moderate leaders were arrested and taken back to Moscow for retraining and to have instilled into them the mistakes and errors of their ways. And they were forced to basically end the Prague Spring reforms, to go back and say, oh yes, no, we're not going to do that anymore, and reclench the fist, okay? Basically give up on what had happened and go back to the way things had been before. And over time, not all at once, but over time, hardline Czechoslovakian officials would gradually replace those reforming leaders. So it wasn't done in a rush and all very quickly like it had been in Hungary. They would basically allow the communist leaders to sort of the moderate leaders, rather than executing them like happened to Nagy, they were sort of pushed away and forgotten about rather than becoming martyrs or heroes, figures for opposition. Okay. So what are the consequences that we need to remember here? Well, I'm going to look at four distinct areas of communism, Cold War things here. So the first is for Czechoslovakia. Protests would continue all the way until January 1969. So there was a lot of opposition to losing the Prague Springs, but it was never armed. And ultimately, they had no choice. They had to accept the reimposition of hardline communism in Czechoslovakia. Most ordinary Czechs realised this, and yeah, they weren't happy about it, but it was that or death, effectively. So they chose the practical option. The Czechoslovakian Communist Party was purged of all moderates and became much more hardline as a result. Dubček is forced to resign, and he ends up being sent off, eventually becomes, I think, ambassador to Turkey, kind of moved out of office. So they don't want to make him a martyr. They don't humiliate him. They just sort of put him in. They send him away to another job where people, out of sight, out of mind, people will forget about him. So he's forced to resign. And then a guy called Gustav Husák comes in. He's a hardline communist, being thoroughly vetted by Moscow. And he reimposes strict communist rule, which will last until the end of the Soviet Union. Well, until the collapse of the Berlin Wall in 1989. As for the USSR, I mean, not a lot of direct impact. Obviously, Brezhnev shows his authority and that he's hesitant to allow too many reforms to happen. The biggest thing is it leads to the creation of what becomes known as the Brezhnev Doctrine. And that's the theory that where a communism must always be a one-party system, there cannot be any multi-party elections or choice, and all member countries have to remain a part of the Warsaw Pact. Once you're in it, you cannot leave. And if you try and leave, you will be repressed by force. So it kind of re-engages or re-emphasizes or basically confirms the principles behind the 1956 invasion by Khrushchev. So once you're in the Warsaw Pact, you can't leave. Now, that obviously has huge consequences for the Warsaw Pact countries. Because, well, they all know now you have to stay in it. There's no choice. Now, for most of them, that was fine because they didn't want to leave because they were led by hardline communist figures. So the leadership didn't want to leave. Albania, ironically, will end up leaving the Warsaw Pact as a result of this. So the Brezhnev Doctrine didn't really stand up there. But again, remember, Albania was separated by Yugoslavia. And so that would have been much harder for the Soviet Union or any other Warsaw Pact country to actually send troops to Albania to try and get them to stay in the Warsaw Pact. They'd have had to invade Yugoslavia, which would have started a war, and they didn't want to risk that. Romania was in a different position because it actually bordered the Soviet Union and Bulgaria. And so they said, OK, we'll remain in it, but they become more distant. So really, this does weaken the Warsaw Pact to a degree. It loses one member, it then another member becomes more distant. And internationally as well, it kind of shows that the ordinary people don't want to be in the Warsaw Pact, so it undermines the prestige of it to a degree. Okay, and you could mirror that with the sort of anger of the European members of NATO and France leaving the military wing following the Cuban Missile Crisis. So kind of a copy of that in some ways. So the Warsaw Pact is weakened. As for the broader Cold War, the USA and UK both protest about this. They say, oh, that's really bad. You shouldn't have done that. You should have let them have democracy. But crucially, they don't do anything about it. The UK can't. It's just not in a strong enough position to do anything. But the USA in 1968 is heavily distracted with Vietnam. Okay, it's going through 1968. There's a presidential election as well coming up. But throughout the spring and summer, there's an increase in the bombing campaign. Johnson's trying to win the Vietnam War before this election. All the focus is there, as well as the race relations protests and riots going on in America. the Americans are distracted. So although they protest and say, oh, you shouldn't have done that, Brezhnev, they can't do anything and they've got their own issues to deal with. So again, America is distracted, much like it was by the Suez Crisis in 1956. Here it's the Vietnam War. They can't do anything about it. The other consequence for the Cold War is that it actually worsens relations with the Chinese. And it's worth bearing in mind, the Chinese have been becoming stronger and stronger. And as a result of which, there's hostility growing between Chinese communism, led by Mao Zedong, which takes a different view and different line from the Soviet Union under Khrushchev and then under Brezhnev. And following the Prague Spring, Mao actually criticizes the Soviet Union and Brezhnev for attacking a communist state. Now, this links into a whole... There was the Soviet-Sinai, I can't remember, war between China and the Soviet Union that goes on, where they actually do go to war in the long border. And that increase in hostility between China and the USSR will be exploited by American President Richard Nixon during the period of detente in the 1970s. So in a sense, that is one of the consequences of the Prague Spring. Ultimately, though, much like Hungary, nothing really has changed in terms of the politics in Europe at this stage. We see evidence that the Czechoslovakians didn't like communist rule. Members of the Communist Party wanted to change things. But as soon as they allowed any change, people rushed or wanted to leave. And that led to military might being used to impose and keep communism. And therefore, communism would carry on for another 21 years in Eastern Europe. And that's basically the Prague Spring in a very quick sort of nutshell. So I hope that's been useful. If you've got any questions, do feel free please to type them in the comments and let me know. Otherwise, I shall return next time and I shall be looking at detente and the 1970s and what was going on there. So moving into the third or final part of the Cold War series. Yay! I hope these are proving useful. Take care and I'll speak to you soon. Bye.